There are a lot of people thinking that he might go. I know Superstar is really high on him. And if you watched him, if you saw him work out, you saw some of the plays he makes. He's a pretty big, fast corner. Kind of fits into that mold the same way that Xavier Rhodes does and could plug into Zimmer's defense very easily.
Yeah, but is he a number 11? But that also could be suggesting that they maybe they trade down for him.
If they could trade down for him, they couldn't trade down far.
Going the other direction.
Yeah, they couldn't trade down far before somebody's going to be willing to take him.
Let's
look at the draft.
Yeah, I'm looking. I'm trying to see where some of these mock drafts have him, but how far down he goes. Now, maybe I'm giving him short shrift here. But he's not. I don't think he's not a top 11, is he?
He easily could be. I mean, he ran a 4.3 or 4.31. He ran one of the fastest 40s at the combine.
Well, that's cooking pretty damn good.
People put that up there pretty high.
Here, let me take a look here. Let's see. Somebody now, some of these are really goofy. Jameis Winston, this one's got him fourth. Vic Beasley, Oakman, Collins, Shaq Thompson's like rated eighth by an SI one. Going to, they're just ranking him. They're not having him. They're not saying where. Actually, they are.
Scouts Incorporated has him ranked 15th overall. As a prospect,
I'm looking at the SI one, and I'm at 15, and he hasn't come up yet. And again, that doesn't mean anything because things change. And the first cornerback it looks like they have going is Marcus Peters from Washington, going 19th to the Chargers, and I'm this one 23rd to Kansas City is where they have him going. So I mean he. Maybe you could get to, maybe if they you know what though my feeling's always been if you really like a guy then use the pick on him.
Yeah, and look how that worked out with Kevin Williams. A lot of people thought we stretched and took him too
high. They thought they screwed up.
Yeah, Terrell Suggs got his name ran up there when we were out of time.
Yeah,
and they thought we missed out on our guy. And turns out we had somebody that was one of the best D tackles in football
for a decade.
Yeah,
but it's. See, what's interesting is this Mike Wallace thing really changes what a lot of people thought they would do going into the draft, where I thought that they would really seriously look at a wide receiver. I don't think that's going to happen now. I think there's little doubt now he's going to try to beef up that defense.
Yeah.
And what makes sense is to look at cornerback or safety, and that Shaq Thompson would certainly fill the bill at safety, and this kid could certainly do it at cornerback. I still wonder, you know what this could be about? Maybe the AP deal comes in again. There's a trade involving Adrian Peterson that they get another pick in the first round. And now that would be a hell of a deal if you can get two top guys to go into your secondary and become starters for you. Did you know how well do you know your football history? The Ronnie Lott year.
I know of Ronnie Lott fairly well.
Okay, when he came into the NFL, they started three rookies in the secondary and wound up winning the Super Bowl with young guys. I mean, it just everything clicked for them.
Well, if you bring in the right guys, they fit the system well.
It works out.
And there's some good defensive backs out there. Trey Waynes, you mentioned Marcus Peters. Shaq Thompson might be one of those guys that drops back into a safety slot. I think we would prefer to use him at outside linebacker primarily.
Yeah, a lot of these drafts that I've looked at, people are slotting him in as a safety. Because they're looking at the position where he could be potentially most dominant, and it appears that is the position. And by the way, if anyone wants to weigh in, 651-989-9105 is the number to do that. And let me take a quick look here. They had him going eighth to Chicago, Shaq Thompson. But this SI one, it's so different from what because they're actually projecting trades. Happening, you know, they have the Raiders picking first, Randy Gregory from Nebraska.
It's pretty tough to do.
And then they got this one also. I think was one of the. It might have been one of the earlier ones, but I don't think there's any doubt as we're saying that they're going to go defense, and they should. Do you think there's a position other than the secondary that they should look at more? I mean, is there a linebacker there?
Well, just honestly, I thought we were going to go defense even before we made the trade for Mike Wallace.
Yeah, I wasn't convinced of that.
A couple of linebackers and a couple of defensive backs that we were looking at. Some of them are probably going to be gone before they can get to us. The ones that we'd really like to have, like a Vic Beasley, he's definitely going to be gone before us. we'd have to trade up to get him. But I think we're sitting fine, and Landon Collins, Trey Waynes, Shaq Thompson, these are guys that we're looking at.
I think
they plug in well.
I think that, to me, the Shaq Thompson one is the type of pick Zimmer wants, because you could play him at more than one position. I mean, he wants a guy, that's what they did last year. They probably would have played him more at defensive end if it wasn't for the fact that they were pretty set at right defensive end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things really worked out for them there. And I think the Shaq Thompson could wind up being a good safety for him. And maybe you could play him some at outside linebacker too.
Yeah.
And move things around. We have to find out, though. This thing is not, they're not done. A lot has to happen yet with the Vikings. Things haven't shaked out entirely with, I mean, we have to find out what's going to happen, the whole Greenway thing, and what they're going to do, who's their middle linebacker going to be. And, do they feel they have somebody already there that can fill that spot? It certainly doesn't seem like it. But this is in that sort of lull period of a free agency. We had a flurry early, but it really has quieted down throughout the NFL. Other than some of the big news, you see Greg Hardy's got a new team.
Did he officially?
It's officially.
I just heard they were talking.
Minimum salary with big upside. The contract, he's not, he's not getting a huge salary out of it. Although, it's the money he's getting makes it tougher than the fine room for Adrian Peterson. So Peterson going to the Cowboys is going to be a lot tougher. And he's getting, what is he getting paid? Adam Schefter says he's making $11.3 million. Very difficult to make him fit. And that, but to take a shot on this Greg Hardy, all I can say is good luck with all that. Let's, we'll take a quick break, but first I want to mention to people, head to 105theticket.com, get your picks into the $1 million bracket challenge, time running out. Don't miss your chance for $1 million or a $10,000 prize. You'll also see how you match up with ticket personalities like Hellboy. I did mine. I got Duke winning it all. Deadline is 11 a.m. tomorrow. Head now to 105theticket.com, your chance to win $1 million. And when we get back, we are going to chat with Bill Robertson, the commissioner of the WCHA. They have their big five, their final five at the X. We'll talk to him about that. We'll do that when we return.
Want to follow your basketball bracket but don't want the boss to catch you watching? Tune in to 105 The Ticket on Thursday and Friday for live coverage of the NCAA tournament.
Tyus Jones on the drive, left side baseline, all the way to the rim. We're tied at 81.
Shot blocked by Kaminsky inside.
In the left corner is good. Aaron Harrison.
We'll have all the office time games starting Thursday at 11 a.m.
The alley-oop and a two-handed stump by Landon Lucas.
The NCAA National Basketball Championships. Hear your brackets bust on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. The Bob Sansevier Show. Only on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
This is a very important person we have as a guest. You better hope that he likes his walk-up, talk-up music. From the WCHA, their commissioner, Bill Robertson, joins us. Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bob, and I love the music.
I'm glad you do, because if not, we're going to fire him. No, we would certainly wouldn't do that. No, he's done a really good job getting music, and now, Bill, you've got a little deal coming up at the exit at the end of the week. The WCHA, your final five. Is that this is a big deal? The final five game schedule. You got the is it tough only having one Minnesota team?
Well, we do have one Minnesota team in the tournament in Minnesota State, Mankato, but at the same time, we have another school, Bemidji State, in the conference, who got beat in a triple overtime game on last Saturday night and did not make the tournament. But, hey, Bob, we have three of the top nine teams in the country coming to the XL Energy Center on Friday and Saturday of this week to participate in the Final Five, which should be great for hockey fans.
Well, give people their rankings so you can get them all whipped up.
You bet. Well, Minnesota State is the number two ranked team in the country, and I think are going to make a deep run into the NCAA men's hockey tournament this year. They're loaded. They have a great coach in Mike Hastings, and I think they're poised and ready to go to the Frozen Four or better. And they're ranked number two, as I said. And then we have Michigan Tech University, which is ranked number four in the country, and they have a great coach who has Minnesota roots, His name is Mel Pearson. He played at Edina High School and then has coached in the WCHA and the Big Ten for many, many years at Michigan, and now he's been at Michigan Tech the past few years, and his team is really good. And then Bowling Green University out of Ohio is the ninth-ranked team in the country, and they're also coming to the Xcel Energy Center. So when you look at those three teams, plus we have Ferris State University, which has played the best hockey of any team in our conference in the last month, it makes for a great tournament this weekend.
Well, and Bill, when you look at it, the fact that you say, as you say, you have the 2, 4, and 9 teams, I'm just trying to, is there anyone out east that has that their tournament? I'm just taking a look at it. I don't think there is.
No, there's no
tournament that'll have higher ranked teams, three of the higher ranked teams gathering for a tournament.
No, not at this level when you have three teams that are ranked that high. And it's unprecedented to see that, but it shows the great quality of the WCHA. Probably a lot of your listeners remember the older WCHA that had the traditional schools in it, but this league is loaded. We have great coaches and great administrators, and I think it says a lot about college hockey these days and where it's heading, and so proud to be overseeing all of this at this point.
Well, Bill, what it says is that it all starts at the top, and that's with the commissioner. And by the way, we're talking to Bill Robertson, commissioner of the WCHA. Bill, how difficult was it last year, certainly more so than this year, to have lost Minnesota and Wisconsin to the Big Ten? Was there some growing pains for the WCHA, or has it been smooth since then from the very beginning?
We grabbed some schools that were in the WCHA, and then we took some schools from the old CCHA, and that happened before I came on board. So the first year under the new alignment in college hockey, I was not around. But coming into it, Bob, the biggest issue that we face overall, and I think it's all of college hockey, is for your listeners or sports fans in general, a lot of them can't tell you what teams are in what conferences in college hockey, and that's disturbing, and we need to change that element. And that's what I'm working on right now with our league, is to make sure we do try to change that and make it better and more efficient for our fans. So they know all 10 teams inside our conference, the WCHA, and we have a wide footprint. We have 2 schools in Alaska, and we have a team in Huntsville, Alabama, plus 2 schools in Minnesota, 4 in Michigan, and 1 in Ohio, and that makes up the majority of the league. But I tell you, that is a hard thing, and I didn't think it would be like this coming in as commissioner, but I'm finding that's a challenge, and we need to be doing a really good job of explaining to the fan base who is in these conferences.
You know, Bill, that's a great point. And by the way, 651-989-9105, 651-989-9105. We have several pairs of tickets to the Friday night's semifinal games of the WCHA Final Five. If you would like them, just give a call, talk to Sam, and he'll set you up. If you want to talk to Bill Robertson, the commissioner of the WCHA, we can put you on the line to talk to him. Bill, is it 5? Did you are half of your teams from the original WCHA? Or the you got Minnesota State, you got Michigan Tech.
Minnesota State, Bemidji, Michigan Tech.
Northern Michigan.
Northern Michigan.
And Alaska Anchorage.
Alaska Anchorage. Yep, those are the schools that were played in the WCHA. All the remaining schools had come from the old CCHA, and then Huntsville was playing as an independent at the time.
Alaska was in the CCHA?
Yes.
Yes, I didn't realize that. Wow. Now, and it's just a matter of really getting these rivalries going, and the fact that you have, as you mentioned, 3 of the teams being nationally ranked. This is going to, you're right, you have a hell of a tournament there. It's just that part of it is bringing awareness to just how good these teams are for people who aren't as deep into hockey as someone like yourself is.
Correct. And college hockey has gone through a transformation, and I think there's going to be more down the road. But I would say this, that it's never been stronger, and I do think more Division I schools, Bob, are going to add the sport as they go, and I think that's going to be a credit to schools looking at college hockey and saying we can make something of this and we can make money at it as well and bring another sport for our student athletes. So that's the plus side to all this when you get this kind of exposure.
Now, Bill, are you considering the WCHA is expansion on the docket for any time in the next few years, or do you just want to stay solid with the 10 you have now?
Well, we're already looking at expansion and talking to several schools about it. Schools have contacted us, and only one school right now that does not have Division I hockey announced in November. That's Arizona State University, that they're becoming a Division I hockey program. And we are talking to them, and we hope those talks continue for months. And I know their head coach is coming to our tournament in St. Paul this weekend, so that'll be a good sign as we try to develop and bring more schools into the WCHA.
Well, it's a huge deal, I would think, for you to be at the X, the XL Energy Center, because there's certainly a, I mean, it's a great facility. You know a little something about that, having spent some time there.
Bet. I think it's the premier hockey facility in all of North America, myself, and we like being there. We go, next year we go to Grand Rapids, Michigan for a tournament, and then come back to XL Energy Center. That's kind of how it lays out right now, but I'd like to do a long-term plan with XL Center. But we need the fans to come out and support the event. That's the hard part, Bob, is that we need these people that the students, the faculty, the alumni of these schools to come and support what is going to be truly a great college hockey tournament.
Well, I would think you're going to get a good crowd, I would assume, from Mankato, right? I mean, they should travel pretty well, because you're talking less than 90 minutes up, up 169. That's not a bad trip at all for these people.
You bet. And we've worked very hard with their institution about bringing up more fans to the game, and they're working very hard at that, and they know they have a really strong team this year. That's the other plus. So for us, we look at that as a positive, and again, those translate into more walk-up sales, and the other schools will bring some fans to. Michigan Tech always travels very well. Bowling Green's a little further away. That might be a challenge, and I know Ferris State is bringing several buses. So that whole West 7th area not only has a Wild game on Saturday at 1 o'clock, but then they have the WCHA Final Five championship game on Saturday at 6 p.m. So that area of town will be very crowded with college hockey and professional hockey going on all in the same day. And if you're a fan, it's truly a great way to spend a Saturday.
Well, it's and you've got, like as you said, you've got a pretty good docket of games to start this thing off. And, yeah. And again, if you're a Minnesota hockey fan, Minnesota State Mankato, there's certainly got to be players on that team that these people are familiar with, if you're a Minnesota hockey fan, and it's good hockey. Bill, I understand some of the issues that you have with just, if you had the University of Minnesota still, if it was the old WCHA, it'd probably be one of the hottest tickets in town, because you'd have more Minnesota teams involved.
You bet. And we understand that, and I came into the job knowing that was going to be part of the hurdle that we have to face. And with my background in media and broadcast and marketing, I thought this is a good challenge, and we're going to have to face it head on and make it work. And that's really what I'm trying to do right now.
Well, Bill, if anyone can do it, I'm betting on you. Bill Robertson, the WCHA commissioner. Bill, thanks for taking the time to join us. And I know that it'll work out for you, because you're a man who can get things done.
Thank you.
All right, take care, Bill.
All right,
thanks for taking the time with us. And we are going to take a quick break. We're going to be joined by Jim Suhan. But first, and SuhanUnfiltered.com is his website, I want to mention to people that you can save money this golf season with the Tee It Up golf card, the card that gives you access to 6 18-hole courses with carts and no restrictions. There are two carts to choose from for just $29 each. Get one or both, a 55% saving, 6 rounds of golf, cart rental, no restrictions for just $129. The golf cart is on sale now. So you want to look into that and get your Teed Up golf cart today. You can find some more information. Give us a call, or 651-989-9105 or 105theticket.com. We're going to be right back with Jim Suhan from Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com.
From pro to college to high school, we've got it all covered.
If you put on 23, you put Jordan on your back. And that's what Zach LaVine did. He really lived up to the moment.
In one of the biggest stages in basketball.
Passionate sports talk on your sports station. 105 The Ticket.
We are joined by Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. Jim, it's always my favorite part of the day, getting a chance to talk to you.
Well, you have low standards, and I'm very glad you have low standards.
No, I do enjoy talking to you. And I wanted to ask you, I was taking a look, you know, the Twins had the split squad game, and they had Maurer batting, second in that game. Is there any reason to be alarmed? It's still early, but, I mean, he went 0-3 today. He's batting .188, and Trevor Plouffe is batting worse than that. When do you start worrying about these batting averages?
I don't worry about spring training batting averages at all. They are completely meaningless. Some of the best spring training batting averages, some of the best spring training players for the Twins in recent years have been Aaron Hicks right before he crapped the bed starting on opening day when they tried to give him the job. Great spring, and by the first at bat of greatest season, he looked completely overmatched. And remember, you know who might be the greatest Twins spring training player of the last 10 years? Luke Hughes. No longer, I believe, in professional baseball. The batting average means nothing. What I look for from what concerns me with Plouffe is fielding. You know, he can get really sloppy with his fundamentals, his mechanics over there. He can make really stupid, unforced errors. And base running. He needs to be a better all-around baseball player. I think Maurer will help him with that. He does have value. He does get extra base hits. Some years it's home runs, some years it's doubles. He has value, but I don't worry about spring training batting average with him. I want to see how he feels, how his fielding is coming. And that's also hard to evaluate in spring training. You know, you really need to see a guy like Plouffe in the regular season to know what you have. And Maurer, I do have concerns about him, but they don't stem from spring training. I don't think he has a lot of adrenaline going at this point in his career, facing people in spring training. What concerns me is that last year, not only was he hurt, periodically, but he struck out more than he usually does, which is a red flag for a player who has such great bat control. And I really felt like the defensive shifts not only robbed him of a lot of hits, he hit a lot of line drives right at people who shouldn't have been standing where they were standing, but they were standing there. But it also seemed to get in his head a little bit. So my concerns with him are strikeouts and hard hit balls that go for outs. I think he's going to have to find a way to beat defensive shifts, beat defensive strategies, which might mean pulling the ball more. And, you know, anytime you have somebody changing their swing when they're or their thinking process in their 30s, there is some danger there.
Well, but when you see a guy like him, you would think because of how great a hitter he'd be, that's not that big a deal. But it is an adjustment for him if he has to do that.
Yes, it is. I mean, he's had the same. If you ever watch his kiddie videos, he's had the same swing his entire life, kind of a natural inside-out swing built for ground balls up the middle, line drives the other way. And that swing was good enough to make him a three-time batting champ and a one-time MVP. And until the injuries started, there's really little doubt he's headed to the Hall of Fame. And now that same swing is producing line drives and ground balls right at people who have scouted him and know exactly where he's going to hit the ball when he hits it hard. And it's a competitive game. If in any other sport, if somebody started doing something to beat you, you'd have to adjust to it. And I think he's going to have to adjust. And I think he's going to have to instead of following the old pattern, which is go deep in count and look for a pitch he can inside out, I think he's going to start looking for fastballs early in the count that he can jack, that he can pull down the right field line, that he can hit for home runs or doubles, and make people pay for playing him that way. And then he's in control instead of the defense being in control.
Did you have a chance to talk to Maurer much when you were down at spring training about, I mean, having him batting second here today, is that where he'd like to slot him in?
When I was there, he was batting Maurer third. I asked him about it once. He didn't really say much about it, so I think he was contemplating it, but he hadn't done it yet. I actually think Maurer should be a number two hitter. I mean, everything you want in a number two hitter. On-base percentage, base running smart. He's a brilliant base runner. He's not a big base stealer, but he is a very intelligent base runner. The ability to pull the ball through the right side and hit the ball, between first and second base, to take advantage of the leadoff batter being on and the first baseman holding. Ability to hit and run, ability to take a pitch if the guy wants to steal, high on base percentage. He's the ideal number two hitter. Gard and I batted him third because of his guardie didn't want to mess with him by moving him around. But that's the wrong attitude. The manager should, and especially when you're a new manager, establish early that you're going to do what's best for the team regardless of the player's reputation or salary. I think Maurer batting Maurer second would be great on all kinds of different levels.
And is there any doubt that Dozier would be batting third then?
Right now, I think he'd be the third batter. There are a lot of different ways you could go there. I like Dozier there because he's a young player. He's a core player. He has power. He has enough speed that he's not going to clog the bases. It gives you a left-right match. I like him a lot there. I mean, my lineup personally would be Santana, Maurer, Dozier, Vargas, maybe Hunter, Arcia, Plouffe, something like that. You're not going to have the same lineup every day.
No.
There might be some platoon situations. Who knows what's going to happen with Escobar and all that. But that would be my ideal top six. And then, you start dreaming about the day Sano comes up and you have really a monster lineup.
Yeah, that's why when you were talking about Plouffe, how long do you think he'll be up at some point mid-season, or what point in the season? What's the earliest you think they'd bring him up? Would it be dependent on obviously how he's playing, but how badly, or if Plouffe is playing fine, he's not going to be coming up?
There are so many moving parts there. They really do want this to be a good year. I mean, they're sick of losing over there. If they think Sano's going to help them win games, they'll bring him up if they think he's ready. So step number one has to be Sano dominating Double A. He's already he's dominated two levels of A ball. If he dominates Double A, they will be ready to call him up when there's an opening. Now you have, okay, Plouffe at third base. Does Plouffe kind of handle third base? Does Plouffe hit enough that you want to keep him on the team and move him around? Does Arcia play well enough left field to stick there? Does Plouffe become somebody you trade? You could even argue right now, if you have any confidence in some combination of Hicks, Schaefer, Rosario, and eventually Buxton handling center field this year, then you really might look at that as having an extra position player between Plouffe and Escobar. And if you could trade one of those guys for value, then maybe you do it. Or you take a conservative approach, which is Santana's not really a proven product. So that you don't know for sure Sano's going to be up this year. Why not have an extra good player around just in case?
And Jim, before we let you, I want to ask you one thing. I want to talk to you about some of your guests. But Santana went four innings, no walks. He gave up three earned runs, four hits, three strikeouts. Did you like him when you saw him down there?
Yeah, and he's a professional. He's not going to blow people away.
No,
he's not going to have a ton of strikeouts. He's not going to be spectacular. But he's a very professional pitcher. He's very durable. He is likely to give him a lot of, and all this is, of course, contingent on health, which is the big variable. But I think he's going to be a 200-inning, relatively low ERA, quality start kind of guy. And while everybody wants the ace, and everybody craves the big name in the rotation, if you go through history, and I've been looking it up lately for column for later, when the Twins get quality starts, which is a very low bar, six innings or more, three earned runs or less, when the Twins get quality starts, they win an incredibly high percentage of their games. If Santana gives them a lot of quality starts, if Nolasco bounces back and gives them more quality starts, if Gibson takes the step forward, and if Meyer's the fifth starter, as I think he should be, if Hughes is anywhere close to where he was last year, then they're going to get a lot of quality starts, and they're going to score a lot of runs, and I think they'll be competitive.
And that means you'll be busy in October. Well,
I hope
not.
Well, I don't think this is a playoff team. I think this is a team that goes from winning in the 70s to winning in the 80s and plays well enough that we're still interested in August. My goal is for us to care about them in August.
Well,
next year it would be to be interested in them in October.
Well, that would be getting close to 500, which would be a big leap. Jim, what do you have on your podcast? Who do you have?
Mike Russo tonight, 4:30 at the Liffey over in St. Paul, catty corner from the XL Energy Center. Perfect place to talk hockey. So 4:30 to 5:30 at SueHannahOnFilter.com with Russo tonight. Friday at O'Gara, 6 to 7. Dan O'Brien, who is a
right-hand
man at football operations.
Yep.
Great guy who's worked in all kinds of different places in Minnesota.
Well, Jim, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next week because we have NCAA basketball tomorrow and Friday on 105 The Ticket. So we'll talk to you on Monday. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, take care. We're going to take a quick break. And by the way, we're going to talk more about that for you when we return about the games tomorrow. But when we come back, talk to St. Thomas University basketball coach John Tower. I want to get his picks on the NCAA. He had a hell of a team in D3 and also a psychology professor over at St. Thomas. We'll talk to John, talk some NCAA brackets, and we'd like to hear from you too if you'd like. 651-989-9105. Be right back.
Golden Gopher Women's Hockey, one of the most dominant hockey teams of all time on 105 The Ticket.
Huge save, Lemieux!
The Gophers look to win their third national championship in 4 years.
Otto shoots, he scores!
Minnesota Golden Gopher Women's Hockey, fighting for the national championship again.
First test is against the Wisconsin Badgers. The NCAA National Semifinals, Friday at 5 p.m.
Score! Minnesota wins!
Women's Golden Gopher Hockey with play-by-play from Dan Hammond on 105 The Ticket. Now back to the Bob Sansevier Show, Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
This is not what you usually play for him, is it? For our guest, John Tower, St. Thomas University basketball coach and professor.
I honestly don't know if I've ever played the same song for him.
Well, John, what do you think?
Hey, you know what? I'm just happy you guys are willing to chat with me, Bob.
So, stop it.
I haven't come up with anything better to this point for you.
All right. Well, that works then. John, let's cut right to the chase. You're the Tommy's basketball coach. You know a lot about basketball. Who's winning the NCAA? How many brackets have you done?
Well, I can't do any. That would be a violation of NCAA rules. But I can tell you I've watched far fewer games than anybody listening to this program. We get so immersed with our show or our program that, the easy bet is to say Kentucky. I've got a soft spot. I love the Badgers. Coach Ryan has been kind of a mentor from a distance. We played against him when I was a sophomore in college when he was at Platteville. And so I went to Madison for my PhD. So, I'll go with the Badgers. That's where my heart is. And I think they've got, other than Kentucky, I think they've got as good a chance as anybody.
Well, that's going to be interesting. I actually think that if you get down to the best regional final, I think, is going to be Wisconsin and Arizona. That's a great matchup.
Yeah, and if they both get there, I mean, it's funny, that's a rematch of last year, and then the winner would play Kentucky, where the Badgers played Kentucky last year in the Final Four. So, some of that's random. I don't know if the committee actually looks at that and says we want a rematch or we don't. But, yeah, I agree. I think Arizona, I thought last year Arizona was as good as anybody, and they're, defensively, they're just so unbelievable what they can do to teams. So that would be a fun game.
Now, John, what do you think? See, I went against the grain on the whole Kentucky thing, and I actually have Duke beating Kentucky in the finals, and that's probably more wishful thinking than anything else, because I like they start three freshmen at Duke, and one of them is a Minnesotan, Tyus Jones, and Jahlil Okafor, one of the, if not the best player in college basketball. But what's your and it's happened certainly with Michigan and their Fab Five. When they played, they made a great run there. But the idea of freshmen carrying a team to a national title, it's happened before. Kentucky's done, had good teams and has done it. But you can't really trust them, though, or can you?
Well, that's a great question. I think the Fab Five, they were probably one of the first teams to really do it. And they obviously lost in the finals back-to-back years. And sometimes I think a stigma gets attached to them where, shoot, if you could have five freshmen lead you to the championship and then five sophomores do it again, not many teams in the history of basketball have done that. And so I think they were amazing because at that time they were playing against juniors and seniors. You look at now, having freshmen in your lineup is not an anomaly for the big schools. And so I think it's a lot easy is the wrong term, but it certainly wouldn't be as surprising to see a team like Duke with three freshmen because they're going against a lot of other teams who are also playing freshmen and sophomores.
At your level, D3, do you start or do you see many freshmen starting? Because you're not going to lose them after a year.
No, we usually don't lose our guys to the NBA. It is interesting. We talk about that sometimes because freshmen, I think we've had one freshman start every game here for 4 years in the last 35 years, and that was Tyler Nicolai, who was our All-American point guard on a national championship team in 2011. Kid from Hopkins who was unbelievable. But I mean, so freshmen generally, most years we have one or two who are in a rotation, but it's a big adjustment. And when I see those guys go from high school to playing for schools like Duke, a kid like Tyus Jones, it is truly astounding what he's doing. Because, at that level, he's going against the best guys night in and night out. And it seems the bigger the game, the better he plays.
And I got to ask you about this. You coach in the MIAC. Jim Smith, who's 80, retiring from St. John. What is it in the water up there? John Gilardi and Jim Smith, between them, they had it's over 110 years of head coaching experience.
It is truly remarkable, and I think some of that's a credit to St. John's and the institution. It's a special place. And as much as we have a rivalry with them, we're also good. I think sometimes that people don't understand, we're friends with them. I mean, Coach Smith, I went to his basketball camps when I was 12, 13, 14 years old, and played against him for 4 years, coached against him for 15 years, and he's a wonderful man. And I think St. John's, it's part of the culture. You look here at St. Thomas, somebody like Steve Fritz, who's been on campus here for 48 years, I think it is. He is, he's an icon here. Jim Smith is there, and it's part of the special part, I think, of Division III. So often you see coaches trying to get to the next job and the next job, and I think you see people like Jim Smith Hugh Fritz, et cetera, and you see that they got to the point they wanted to be, and then they did an unbelievable job while they were there.
Well, and it's, I mean, I'm just amazed. You had two guys that go into their 80s at St. John's. And now, I remember, this goes back to the late 1970s. I working at the Atlantic City Press, and Jim Boeheim came down because they had a basketball player in South Jersey that he wound up signing. A kid never did anything. He had some injuries. But, I mean, Jim Boeheim said 3 more years and he's going to be out. And he's not 80, but my God, he's been around forever too.
It is incredible. And obviously to do that, you have to have the confluence of, you know, number one, a passion for the game, a passion for working with young people. You also have to have some good fortune that you have good teams. Usually you don't get to stick around until you're 80 if you're not winning a lot of games. And you also have to, I'm sure Boeheim would be the first to admit, he's had great assistance along the way. And I think, you know, Coach Smith, Coach Gilardi up at St. John's, I'm sure they have as well. I know they have. So, you know, it's like anything in sports. It's a team effort. And certainly, you know, Coach Smith will be missed. I just, before games, some of my fondest memories, we were just chatting with him for a few minutes before the game. And the ball would go up and we were heated rivals. But, you know, before and after the game, it was always very friendly and amicable.
So right now, Jim Smith, 80 years old, retires as coach at St. John's. He has a career record of 786 and 556. Now, when would you break that record? Somewhere around 2050? 2040?
So that's about 1,300 games or so. I think I'm about 120 right now or so. So we try and take it 1 year at a time. Bob, I hope we're on the radio with you 45 years from now and you're still doing your show and I'm coaching. But
that'd be great. That'd be really fun, John. It's a little preview of what it would be like. That would be wonderful. I hope that is the case. John, it's always great talking to you. John Tower, coach at St. Thomas, and also a professor there of psychology. We'll talk to you again next week. Thanks so much, John.
Sounds good. Thanks, Bob.
All right, take care. We're going to wrap things up. And remember, what
Vikings emerge as top candidate to get free agent safety Taylor Mays. I'm sure the guys will have more on that.
Huge! For them. The guys being superstar Mike Morris and Ben Holson. They'll be coming up next, but I wanted to mention we will join you again on Monday because during our time, the 2 to 4, you're going to be hearing NCAA basketball on 105 The Ticket. You're going to want to listen to that. You're going to love that, and we look forward to talking to you again on Monday. See you then.
Sports Radio, 105 The Ticket.